This is the Authentic Persuasion Show.
Hey, what's going on, everybody? Welcome to the after show. I got Miss Teresa Dodson with me from Greenbacks Consulting. We just finished part one of that conversation. Make sure to check that out everywhere podcasts are sold, as well as the Jason Cutter YouTube channel. Teresa, welcome to the after show.
I feel like a VIP in an after show. It's like an after party. Yes. This goes on in my head.
Yes. Now the lights are off, the camera's off, the paparazzi's all gone. And we're here just to chat. Just ignore the camera and the lights and all that stuff. Just pretend it's not there. I always find that this is kind of fun. It's like some extra stuff. Anybody who knows me knows that I have tons of questions. I take lots of notes. There's more stuff than you know, we can put in a 30-ish minute podcast. So I always like to have this part here. I want to dive into it because I was thinking about it as you were talking, and I mentioned this at the end of part one, where, you know, you see across industries, you know, different things from collections, pure collections, to financial services, to debt relief, across departments within organizations, collections, you got collections, customer service, retention, you got sales. What would you say are some good lessons that sales could take from the other parts of the house? Right? Or the other industries, you know, something like collections.
You know what? I think they can learn more from us. I mean, think about it. I mean, think about a collection agent, you know, they're basically on an auto dialer and they're like, give me your money. You know, I mean, there's really no relationship building there. Now, What I've seen that's been very effective for collection agents is if when we talked about it in part one of this, empathy. Okay, if I've got a collection agent that's on the phone that empathizes with the consumer that's struggling on making the payments, has gone into collections, doesn't have that tactic of, you know, you're a piece of garbage and you didn't pay your bills, you know, because a lot of collection agencies used to treat people that way. Mm-hmm. And it's like, do you really think that's going to give you a good result? Probably not. Mm-hmm. Or they will get bullied and then they finally pay you something, right? But what I've seen in the collection space is the most effective collectors take on a lot of what we do, which is relationship building and being empathetic about that consumer and kind of being very soft about the approach of, hey, you know, I understand you're in a tough place. What can we do to make this work? So I would flip that. I think that they could learn more from, I mean, we spend hours on the phone with the client and we get to really know their situation. I think if they're more empathetic and really try to put themselves in the consumer's shoes. The collection agents I know that have done that, they do so much better than a standard collection agent. It's like, hey, you owe this money, pay me.
Well, and that was going to be the second part, which is what could they learn from sales? I think the one thing which you had mentioned it in part one, and I think it's good to throw in here as well, is the biggest thing that sales could learn from collections, retentions, and a lot of that other side of the house is that retention starts from the moment the client is engaged. And I would say it's even before salesperson or an enrollment specialist gets on the phone with them, which is the marketing, the outreach, however that lead is generated out in the world, retention begins with them because it's got to all match. It's all got to be in alignment. And I think that goes back to what you said in part one, where sales sometimes just says what they say and not thinking about the long-term client, then retention has to clean that up on the back end, right?
Right, exactly. You know, one of the things I always tell them, it's like, you know, you're not selling a product. You're not selling a widget where it's like, here, buy my widget. And then you'll never hear from the client again. This is totally different. You know, so even like when I'm looking for sales reps or if I'm looking for customer service reps, I don't want some, like customer service is a great example. I wouldn't hire anybody unless they had at least 2 to 3 years on the phone customer service experience. I'm not just going to hire somebody that has never done any kind of phone customer service because that's all the work is phone. It's not face to face. There's a big difference between the two. So and I feel like that's the way it is with the sales guys too. I mean, or gals, sorry. But you know, salespeople is I don't want somebody that's, I want to, this is the, in this particular industry, I want somebody that's extremely experienced and actually understands, but I also don't mind, I will take back something I just said. I don't mind if I have somebody that's very green because I can teach them the right way to do it. So some of my successes have been somebody rolling right out of college, you know, mm-hmm. right out of college, hit the sales floor. And it's like, okay, let me show you the right way to do this. And let me show you why you're doing it the way you're doing it. Let me train you all about the program. I've watched that work really, really well. So I don't know if that answers the question or not.
It does. No, that's perfect. And that's been my experience well, right? Where that blend of, okay, I want someone with experience. So I don't have to teach them everything, but where's the over under on undoing and helping you unlearn the mm-hmm. potentially painful, bad, or ineffective habits you have in your sales conversations, right?
Yeah. And I think what you need to do is, because we get that a lot in our space, right? Where you get somebody else's, another sales rep that came from another company, they got all these bad habits, right? Because they weren't trained right. It's just like how you have to treat your clients that you're talking to enroll. You have to manage the expectation and be transparent up front. If I'm hiring somebody from another company, I can already see they've got bad habits, or I'm just going to nip it in the butt before they can even say they had a bad habit, or before I can even see it. It's like, look, I know this is the way you did it at ABC Financial, but over at XYZ Financial, you're going to go through our training program. You're going to learn probably more than you've ever learned before about what a client goes through. And you're going to learn how to do it the way we want it done. So don't bring any of that with you. Okay. I know you're super knowledgeable. I know that you know what you're talking about, but we want to make darn sure that you're doing it the right way. So as long as you manage that expectation up front with them, you can get some of them to turn, but I got to tell you, your sales manager has to manage those people. They really have to listen to those calls. They've got to be really aware because they slide back into their old habits, especially if they start getting desperate on the enrollments. They start getting that pressure, like, I need to enroll, I need to enroll, you know, and then all of a sudden they just slide back into their old way of doing things. And then that's when you're in trouble.
Yes. Lots of trouble in many different categories of trouble, both from a compliance and then also it's also not effective. And so they're not going to be good deals or there's not going to be any deals. So I had also mentioned in the first part that I wanted to ask you, you've been at this over 20 years in and around these kind of industries and this kind of space. What have you seen as far as what it takes to enroll consumers or help consumers or move consumers forward, right? Because if we're talking collections, retention, sales, enrollment, that kind of thing, like move them forward now versus before, where companies are still trying to play the same game from a long time ago, old school tactics, versus what are people looking for now, like consumers?
Well, the difference with consumers today and specific to this industry, versus 10 years ago is they have more knowledge today. Consumers are shopping you. They know what collections is. They know what debt settlement is. They know what it is. So a lot of times you're talking to a client on the phone or a potential new client, you're talking to them and they've already talked to two other companies. And the only thing that's going to make the difference, that's the difference. Because back then, like 10 even plus years ago, beyond that, like, what's debt settlement? They had no idea what that is. And you had to really explain it to them, which you still should do that. And you are required to do that. But the likelihood of them understanding it more today is far greater than it was 10 plus years ago. And also they are shopping around there. And what they're shopping around for, guys, is not like the freaking best deal. They're shopping around on, who do I trust? Who do I trust to handle this for me moving forward? Again, average program, 42 months. Who do I trust to manage my finances moving forward if I take this big aggressive step? So what a consumer is deciding on is, who do I trust? And where does trust come from? You know what you're talking about. You're confident and you're transparent. Simple.
Got it. I love it. And it's so true, right? Versus I've got to educate you and tell you things versus I want to be your guide. I want to support you. I want to use empathy, which you mentioned a bunch in the first part. And then I'm here to help you and I want you to trust me, which is different than please trust me. And here's why you should trust me, which then tends to go over the line into the gross sales related stuff. Where do you see consumer behavior going? Do you see anything changing with that? Or is that pretty much the mode, you know, consumers having knowledge, information, looking for who they can trust more than just the big deal, the best deal? Is that what you see continuing?
I think with consumers, their emotional attachment, their emotional identification with money has changed over the last 3 to 4 years with everything we've just gone through. So consumers today are a little bit more comfortable with if they do default, they're like, look, I got to cover my nut. I got to make sure I got food on the table, the car payments taken care of. Apparently I need to take out, I don't know, a huge loan for gas, you know, whatever it is, you know, they want to make sure, they want to make sure that everything is, you know, all their, the things that are more important are covered. And they realize going through what we just went through, if I slide on my credit card payments or if I need help, and that's the big one. People don't like asking for help. Okay. Mm-hmm. I need help managing this. They're like, okay, they're a lot more apt to do that today than they were 3 years ago. So, you know, I always tell everybody, you know, it's a psychological enrollment. It's a psychological thing with customer service. Part of the process of being in either debt settlement or collections, consumers identify how their self-worth is with how they're doing financially. That's the easiest way to describe it. If I am buried in debt and I'm barely getting by, I'm a loser. I feel like a, you know, big loser. Hmm. If I'm killing it and all my payments are on time, or hey, I got no debt, and I'm just doing really good, I feel like a completely different person. I feel on top of the world. So it's, again, read the room, guys. Who are you talking to? You're talking to somebody that doesn't feel very good about themselves, right? But that's something you always have to remember, talking to these consumers, and you have to empower them and kind of guide them to, you know, you're going to find a way out of this. But the other thing is, like I said, the biggest change in the consumer behavior is now they're willing to accept that more, okay? They're willing to accept that, hey, I do need help. You know what? I'm not killing it. I don't think it necessarily makes me a loser anymore. I just need help. And that's the shift that I've seen psychologically with consumers from 3 years ago beyond to today. They're more accepting of, hey, I need help, and where they weren't like that before. And they don't beat themselves up as much as they used to.
I could totally see that. I hadn't thought about that before, but you know, the people who pride, ego, way they are brought up, work ethic, whatever that might be, that they don't want to ask for help, versus most of the world needed some level of help. You know, and a lot of these people that might need help now, they needed help and they accepted, you know, just the conditions of the world over the last 2 to 3 years, such that it's like, okay, I don't have to do it all on my own, right? It's not that I'm a loser and I need help. It's okay, there's programs out there that can help me. Just so that it doesn't even get worse, which is kind of what happened, you know, during the early pandemic, which is the government stepping in and saying, here, before it gets worse for you as an individual, you know, here's some ways to help. So I think that's a great insight and definitely, you know, helps. I mean, if somebody needs help, the biggest challenge is getting them out of their own way to realize it and then accept some level of help and move forward. All right. So last thing I wanted to ask you about, which I think is fascinating, and I appreciate you for it, like in the industry. And then I can see, you know, the challenges that you might face being a woman in the debt finance space, also helping organizations. You know, most of the companies I know, very male dominated sales, being, you know, especially when there's money involved for salespeople, it's, you know, it's mostly male driven. I'm on the board of an organization called Girls Who Sell. So to me, it's all about, how do you balance that? What do you, not like what have you had to deal with, but what is the biggest suggestion you have for companies in making sure they're diverse and equitable across all different groups, right? Not just gender, but race and economics and backgrounds and all those things. And then also leadership. You know, like what are you trying to instill in companies, or what advice do you have to either companies or women in similar roles as where you've been?
Well, you know that I love where you've led with this, because you're right. In the financial services industry, it's very male dominated. It has improved dramatically compared to when I first got into it. I shared a story with you, and I'll share it with everybody else. You know, when I first got into this industry, I remember going in 2004, I went to a conference, and I was one of three women in the room of about 300. And I went, wow, okay, this is interesting. And that's not the case anymore. I'd say in our industry, it's about, and I've checked this up with the women in collection space too. It's about 30%. It's improved. There's about 30% women in these companies. There needs to be more improvement, but at least it's improved somewhat since then. You know, I think if there's a couple of different ways to look at this, right? So for me personally, I could just talk about my personal experience. I didn't see that as a hindrance. I saw it as a challenge, and I was like, all right, cool. You know, let's do this, you know? And one of the ways that you do it is start, I don't want to be insulting to anybody out there, and hopefully don't take it this way, but, you know, start thinking more like a guy. You know, we tend, there's a lot of benefit that women bring to these roles and positions because they do think of things that are a little bit more detail oriented. Okay. That's no slide on guys, but every guy I talk to will agree with it. We tend to be a little bit more detail oriented and we're really good planners. And one of the things that I see from men that are very successful in this space is they just jump first, ask later, and they I'll figure it out along the way. We can learn as women. I've learned a lot from that. And I tell every woman, you know what? Be more like that, because we tend to overthink everything, because everything's got to be perfect. And you want to know why? Because we are in a male dominated industry, and God forbid we make one little slip up, we'll never hear the end of it. Or if a guy did it, nobody even knows about it, nor do they care. That's the reality. Okay. That's the reality of women in business and an industry that's male dominated. You got to start thinking like that and jump, you know, trust yourself. You make good decisions. You know, the next thing I would say is, how do you expect our industry to grow? And with more, you know, C-level women or even women in management, if you're not mentoring and supporting women, okay, that's something you need to take the time to do. You need to kind of keep your eye out for women that are, you know, that look like they're bright and like there's promise, and, you know, try to mentor them and coach them along. I see where a lot of women, if they're in a male-dominated industry, they tend to be threatened. Like, I've gotten my position here in this place, and I'm not going to let her take it.
One seat at the table.
Yes. And for whatever reason, they get in that mindset. And that's the worst thing you could do, because that's going to backfire on you. You have to support each other. And that's why I put together Women of Debt Relief. So, you know, I launched an organization. It's a nonprofit last March of, 2021. So 2021. It was a passion project, and it's because of this very thing you're bringing up. And I was like, you know, I want to see if I get a lot of takers, if I get people that really want to be a part of this. And they did. And so now, you know, here we are, we've had a couple of, like, we have like these Women of Debt Relief luncheons, at these conferences, and we bring in great speakers, and we get people that are donating to the organization. We're looking at mentoring and growing other women in the space. We do a lot of, like, we're one of the things that we're trying to do is some financial literacy stuff within, like, from a grassroots point of view locally. You know, we're still early on, but we're still trying to develop what we want it to be. But the main reason why we did it was to support and really provide guidance to women and support each other and help each other grow. That's how you change that dynamic. And that's also how you identify the value to a male dominated industry and kind of change some hearts and minds to be able to grow in that path. You know, and then there's another thing. If you are the CEO of a company, you're a C-suite person at a company, I want you to stand back and take a look at everybody in your leadership. And if it's all men and there's no women in there, you might be doing something wrong here. You know, take a look at that. Do your own inventory. I did this with a very dear friend of mine recently. And I'm like, you realize that every single person that's the C level is all men. I go, that's not a good look, you know? And they're like, oh my God, I never even noticed that. So that's something, you know, take your own inventory, take a look at that. And what are you losing? You know, what are you missing out on by having that diversity? it's great for your company. You know, it's like, you don't want a bunch of yes people and a bunch of people that think the same. You want a bunch of diversity to make everything better and make your company better.
Yeah, I love that. Well, and the big thing is there's the visibility, which obviously got a lot of attention over the last few years, and companies wanting to check the box of the diversity, you know, initiatives. And then there's looking at it, like I know that you do as well, which is the clients are different and diverse. Your customer base, the people you're enrolling in your program are different, which means your salespeople should be different as well to resonate with different people. And then those people should be reflective in your leadership because they're all different. So leadership should be different, right? It's not even just, well, let's check this box. It's doing what you're saying, which is let's mentor and support. And, you know, does your leadership team reflect your frontline team, which reflects your customer base? Unless you sell to the same homogenous group of people, which you don't, then it should be different. So I love that. Where can people find more information about the Women of, what was debt it? Relief. Women of Collections?
No.
Women of Debt Relief.
womenofdebtrelief.org. Really okay. Simple. And it includes women that are in the settlement space, credit counseling, collections, any kind of technology that's in the financial services space. It's all inclusive. Any women in financial services could absolutely be a part of the organization. And we've got, you know, we've got a Women of Debt Relief luncheon that's coming up at AFCC in October. The last one we had in New Orleans was, we had a speaker who was fantastic, had a great turnout. Men are more than welcome to come. We had at least 25% men in the room. And that's the encouraging thing. There's a lot of men that really support the organization, and, you know, they donate all the time and they want to sponsor anything that we're doing. So, you know, I can't say enough about that. I think that's fantastic. It's out there. They understand it, but that's where you can find out more information about it and, you know, see if it's something you're interested in.
I love it. And when you told me about that before we set this up for recording, I was like, do you know the amazing Kelly Decker? And you're like, of course, she's a part of this. And I had her on the podcast about a month or so ago, and she was great. So I love that, bringing those people together. And I can think of some other ones from other financial related services, some women, powerful women I want to set you up with as well. So I appreciate you bringing that, you know, focus to it and helping with that, and helping companies just realize, like, the key to success is the different ideas and different backgrounds and different points of view. And I love what you said to support women in the industry, which is, it goes back to confidence, which we talked in number one, in part one, about sales, just having the confidence, trusting in yourself, and, you know, and just kind of jumping in more. And, mm-hmm. and, you know, not only planning, right? Not having one mode, but, you know, kind of balancing that. So thank you for being here, Teresa. As I mentioned in part one, for anyone who wants to follow up with you, obviously there's the nonprofit you just mentioned. Greenbacks Consulting is your main website. And then Teresa Dodson on LinkedIn. All the links will obviously be in the show notes. Thank you for coming on, for staying on for part two, for the after show. Hopefully it was the VIP experience that you were hoping for. And I appreciate you being on here.
Well, thank you so much. I really appreciate it as well. This has been great. Thank you, Jason.
And for everyone, like I said, make sure to check out part one, available on podcasts, available on YouTube. You can also go to cutterconsultinggroup.com and go under there, under the shows, under the podcast, and find it. Please make sure to listen or watch part one, support this. Get, you know, if you're in sales or you're running a sales organization, make sure to check out part one, because there was so much good stuff in that. And thank you for being here in this conversation. Until next time, keep selling with authentic persuasion.